Good evening. I'm Jim Zirin. Welcome to Conversations in the Digital Age. Tonight's show is about NSA spying and Brazil. The Snowden affair revealed that the United States had been systematically spying on our friendly neighbor to the south, Brazil. As a result of the revelation, Brazil's President Dilma Rousseff canceled a scheduled trip to Washington for a state visit with President Obama. She also threatened to take Brazil off the World Wide Web. Why did we spy on a friendly democratic country, which was a neighbor? What did we hope to achieve? And was it worth the risk to the U.S.-Brazilian relationship? Our guest tonight knows Brazil like a book. She is Julia Swag. Julia Swag is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. She is a columnist for Brazil's largest newspaper, Folha. And Julia, we're delighted to have you back with us.
Jim, I'm so pleased to be with you. Thank you.
Now, you've met Dilma Rousseff. You've seen her eyes, eye to eye. What is she like?
Well, I've been with President Rousseff on a couple of occasions and seen her interact with her own staff and seen her interact with Americans. And I found her to be very much a person in control, very much a focused person whose emphasis in terms of her mandate is on securing the domestic achievements that her predecessors began in terms of reducing poverty, reducing inequality, growing a middle class. She's a tough person. She was friendly, of course, in a ceremonial circumstance. And she has, since I've seen her, which the last time was last year, encountered a very tough domestic and international environment. And we're seeing her now prepare to run for re-election next year in a very different context than the one in which she was first elected 3 years ago.
And why is it different?
Well, it's different in a couple of ways. First of all, in 2010, which was the last year that Lula was in office, she took office the beginning of 11.
She was his protege.
She was his chief of cabinet. She was his minister of mines and education. She was the godmother, really, of some of the major development, domestic development and anti-poverty housing education programs that he put into place. But Brazil in 2010 had a 7.5% growth rate, and that was the last year of very, very high growth for about 5 years. And since then, it took a while for the global economic crisis to hit Brazil, but it has. So now we're seeing under 1%, maybe climbing up to 1.5%, 2% next year. So that contraction has created a lot of unhappiness. The second thing that's happened, you could say, is Brazil has been a victim of its own success in that by moving 40 million people from poverty into the lower middle class, let's say, in a very short period of time, we have in Brazil a crisis of rising expectations. So you have a solid middle class, which now wants more government accountability. That's what those protests were about earlier this year. We're paying high tax dollars here. What are you spending the money on? Now, that's a familiar refrain. And in Brazil, where you have services that are very, very uneven in terms of the rich get much better services than the middle class and the poor, there's now the space, the democratic space, and the economic cushion, if you will, to demand that the government perform better.
Will success spoil Dilma Rousseff?
Well, that has to do with the answer to that question has to do with many things, but also with what kind of opposition will she have. But in any case, those are some of the dynamics that have made her first term quite challenging.
Well, let's get back to the spying. Before Snowden, it seemed that Brazil's strategy was a close strategic relationship with the United States. Now they seem to have pulled away from that, and they're more interested in a multilateral relationship than a close relationship with us. Is this just a political ploy on her part in the run-up to the election, or is this really a serious change in Brazilian attitude?
I think at this moment, right now, in the wake of the cancellation of the state visit, although it was described as a postponement, but let's say it was a cancellation, to be honest about it. It does look like there's a pull away and that there's been a decision to reorient. But I actually think that that's that more the Brazilian approach, what we'll see come back, maybe not immediately, but perhaps once after the election, or maybe certainly after the election, which is in 2014, is that Brazil wants to have it always, pursuing a strong leadership role in the multilateral system, also having what the two governments call a strategic partnership. So this is not an alliance relationship as the United States has with the United Kingdom, but there has been a recognition that there are many mutual interests, economic, security, political, diplomatic, global, that the two countries ought to try to achieve together, not agreeing on a lot of things, but by and large that there's an interest in both. So I think what we'll see for now is an emphasis on the multilateral environment, on the BRICS, on South Africa, India.
The BRICS are Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa.
Correct.
Maybe some others.
That is, you know, it's a multipolar world, or it's a world in which there are many power centers. And Brazil, in a very ecumenical way, is going to attempt to make nice with everyone.
Well, is it really, the BRICS really a trading bloc, or was it a loose federation, or was it invented by Goldman Sachs?
It was invented by Goldman Sachs, and when I say BRICS or IBSA, which is India, Brazil, South Africa, it's almost just sort of quick code or vernacular for the emerging world, as opposed to dealing primarily with the European Union and the United States.
What defines the emerging world? It's a country that hasn't had a debt default in 5 years.
It's a country that has that. According, if you ask Goldman Sachs, these are the countries that are making up a gigantic percentage of the global GDP.
Where they want their clients to invest.
Well, let's move away from the Goldman Sachs issue. The issue, I think, is for Brazil, to your question, is Brazil is has a diverse portfolio of diplomatic and economic ties that it's building, sees itself as, you know, needing to have a very strong relationship, but manage its relationship with China. For China has been one of its largest consumers of almost everything Brazil exports in South America.
And they're
America.
A heavy player in the oil company, Petrobras, aren't they?
They are, but actually not hugely heavy. And, you know, since you mentioned oil, that's very important. Brazil has made a huge investment in deep water drilling, and we've yet to see how that's going to bear fruit. So it's got, in terms of what's on the problem ledger, to really make good out of this investment in the deep water oil. It's got coming up, and for this, the United States is very important, as is the rest of the world. Global Games, it's hosting the World Cup in 2014 and the Olympics in 2016. Each of these events is going to, again, put Brazil on the global radar, and I think that the rational strategists in Brasilia, when you peel away the domestic politics, understand that the United States for Brazil is essential. What I don't think is clear is that in Washington, Brazil is seen as essential to Washington, and I think that's where we still are going to have some hurt feelings, noses out of shape, frustration, irritation over Brazil trying to have it all. And this cutoff of the relationship or of the state visit will, I think, take some time in Washington to overcome.
Well, let's go back to spying, because it came out shortly thereafter, maybe Washington counterattacked, and they said, you know, Brazil's been spying on us and spying on our embassies in Brasilia and our consulates elsewhere in the country. And is this Rousseff's outrage, a little bit of the kettle calling the pot black of the corrupt police chief in Casablanca, who said he was shocked that there was gambling going on as he pocketed his winnings?
Well, I mean, let's stipulate, of course, that everybody spies on everyone else, so we can get that off the table.
So why is it such a big deal?
But the equivalence that your question suggests, I think, is inaccurate. The NSA was spying on Brazil, and what we learned most recently was on the president and on her cabinet members and on her inner circle, on her phone call, emails and texts. Also,
what
on Petrobras.
Yeah, but what do they hope to learn? Are they going to get the morning line on the World Cup? I mean, what are Brazil's secrets that we need to know?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, the strong reaction that Brazil had was very similar, if not verbatim, to the strong reaction that Angela Merkel had in Germany. But nobody is suggesting that Angela is a baby and she shouldn't be so naive. I think that there is an issue here about NSA overreach. And the question that you raised in your opening, which is, what is it that we're trying to get from our democratic allies by so deeply penetrating their digital insides of their brains and their communications? And I think that's a question that is now being answered or will be looked at very seriously in Washington and Senator Feinstein's committees by the White House. But how it played in Brazil is, again, you know, the information we have about Brazil spying, and of course, Brazil has a satellite network that covers the Amazon and much of South America that allows them to pick up intelligence on their neighbors. So clearly, this is not something that Brazil doesn't do. But Albin, its equivalent of the NSA, doesn't have near the capabilities that the NSA does, and it doesn't have the technology. And what it was spying on was the activities of our diplomats in Brazil. It wasn't spying on President Obama's phone or his cabinet members or our major industrial jewels of the crown. So are they correct to take umbrage? Well, I think the world has taken umbrage of this, and the Brazilians don't get the kind of respect when they do because they're still in that emerging world, because they're not one of the big boys, because of the kind of skepticism that Washington, maybe New York, still has about what kind of power Brazil wants to be globally.
What kind of judgment is there in the United States government? I mean, this smacks of Eisenhower sending over a U-2 on the eve of a summit conference with Khrushchev, causing the summit to blow up, only figuratively. Here on the eve of a summit meeting between Rousseff and Obama, she was coming to Washington, an important state meeting. Then it turns out that all the time we were spying on her personally. Very good.
Whose decision was it? You know, I think it's still unclear what the president knew and when he knew it. This is, you know, the giant national security state seeming to do something because it can, not because it should. And there's been a lot of discussion about whether the president was aware that he had, in fact, authorized this or whether he inherited it or overlooked it. And I think you raise a good question. What is it that we were trying to learn? And is it legitimate to do that kind of thing with our close democratic allies?
Now, they also spied on Petrobras, the Brazilian oil company. By the way, the Chinese are major players in Petrobras, but there's the largest Japanese population outside Japan in Brazil.
That is true.
Are the Japanese players as well?
Not on the scale that you're talking about, not like China. But let me go back to this issue, because one of the things to the NSA issue, the sequence of learning based on Snowden's, the release by Glenn Greenwald and The Guardian and Globo, was that we had several Sundays in a row, starting in several Sundays over the course of the summer, starting in June of 2013, in which a big sort of like 60 Minutes of Brazil was doing this big splashy release of Snowden and Greenwald collaboration. And the first thing that was exposed in June, this is 3 months before the state visit, was picking up metadata from Brazilian users, from their emails, their phones, their text messaging. At that point, there was no public grandstandy Brazilian relationship. There was some quiet discussion. There was some uncomfortableness expressed, but it was handled between the foreign ministries and between the two presidencies in a kind of quiet, low-key way. Then a couple of months later, there was a further revelation about Petrobras. And right after the Petrobras spying revelation, President Rousseff and President Obama met at the G8 summit in St. Petersburg, hosted by Putin. At that point, there was still a plan to go ahead and have the state visit, and Obama was going to get back to her with some information. That is to say, they looked like they were handling it professionally. It was potentially embarrassing, but they were managing it. Then, about A week later, on the next Sunday, on Globo's television show, the new revelation that the spying was directly on the president. And at that point, where White House was unable to apologize, unable to say that it wouldn't happen in the future, unable to provide any information, the president and her advisors seems to have come to a consensus that she couldn't show up in Washington 2 weeks later for a state visit, having just had a scandal, which by then also had become part of the domestic political debate inside of Brazil, which it was not initially.
But doesn't Brazilian domestic politics play a role in her posture? She's up for re-election.
Very much so.
Anti-Americanism abounds. It's rekindled by the Snowden revelations.
Well,
as it's coming out as a drip feed where there's more and more spying going on. And first it's Petrobras, and then it's the country, and then it's Rousseff herself. So it seems to me that she could get a lot of her popularity, by the way, is about what Obama's is, around 37% to 40%, it seems. And so she had everything to gain by politically by her profession of outrage over the whole thing.
True. She started out before the protests start, and just to paint the domestic political context, the protests started back in June, and this, as your audience will remember, were massive protests that went on for more than a month in the streets of major and minor cities almost throughout the whole country. At that time, before the protests started, her approval ratings were higher than Lula's, at about 80%, which is just unheard of. Then they took a big dip down. And when the NSA scandal started, they stayed low. And for sure, as the drip, drip, drip happened, she found an opportunity to begin to repackage herself and boost her standing. But as you see, as you mentioned, her approval ratings did not exactly climb through the roof again. And that's because the Brazilian public is not judging her principally on the relationship with the United States. I think it's very important that you understand that although she might get a bump within her own circle and maybe within the Workers' Party, the PT, as a general case, what that next election is going to be about is not taking on the Americans, is not foreign policy. It's going to be about her ability to deliver domestically. So this might get her a little bump, but it's not the you can't win an election in Brazil on an anti-American platform.
Tell a little more about the protests. I mean, what sparked them? It was, I guess, the higher bus fares, and it was also the fact that the government had spent billions on stadiums throughout the country for the World Cup. I think there are 12 venues all over the country for the World Cup, only one for the Olympics in Rio. But most of those 12 stadiums are never going to be used after the World Cup.
Story that repeats itself.
Brazil is big in football. They call it football. We call it soccer. But that said, you could see why people would be aggrieved that billions are going for that and nothing for public services, education notably, or infrastructure.
Well, you're right that the protests were kicked off by a protest over a bus fare hike, and the bus fare hike was a matter of cents in Sao Paulo, just a few pennies. But that's the sort of thing when people have to spend an hour, 2 hours commuting on public transportation to get to their jobs, and they're paying the highest taxes in the Western Hemisphere, the sort of opportunity to use their digital devices to organize through social media and to take on the man, or the woman, as you will, really picked up speed, and it much more so than the organizers of the bus fare specific issue ever anticipated. And it picked up speed, and I think we saw a level of anger and unhappiness and frustration that there was nobody that expected this. It took everyone by surprise, and it forced a discussion about what the government is spending its money on. And the stadiums, of course, are the worst possible symbol of misplaced priorities. And that's what came out. And even some of the information subsequently about the insider bidding and the corruption related to the contracts given for the stadium builders and the physical shape of the stadiums themselves, where there have been safety issues and other problems. That needs to be ironed out over the next 8 or so months. And then what we're going to, what the big question is, will the protests resume again when the world's eye is again on Brazil for the World Cup? Or will there be enough evidence that the government, and when I say government, I think it's important your viewers understand that there's a coalition government in Brazil. It's true that Dilma is from the Workers' Party, but the coalition that she has to manage is of about 10 or 12 different political parties in the Congress. So it's very, very difficult politically to get things done when you have to work with Congress. She has opposition governors in a couple of key states. Exactly. So this is not an executive with authoritarian powers that can just reallocate money and put it into social spending.
She was a revolutionary. She revolted against authoritarian powers, spent some time in jail.
Yes, she did. And I think that history, you know, that there's another aspect of this protest chapter in Brazil that's really important, which is, in a way, it's the sort of beginning of the end of a leadership generation that did cut its political teeth fighting against the dictatorship, against the military. That was the case of Lula, the case of Dilma, the case of Fernando Henrique Cardoso, the previous three presidents, all of whom built the democratic platform that we see now that's very solid in Brazil. But they have, in a sense, been taken aback by how it could be that the efforts that their generations have made over the last 25 years haven't delivered as quickly as they might like for as many people as they might like. And what I think we're going to look at in 2014 and going forward is who are the next leaders in Brazil and how are they going to manage this very unwieldy congressional environment where political reform, tax reform, labor reform, the whole generation of second and third generation reforms are very, very tough to get through. When you have also a country which is in part still quite based on a kind of feudal sort of patronage system in some of the states.
Now, as also as a result of the revelations, I think we mentioned this at the beginning, she threatened to take Brazil off the World Wide Web, creating an effect, a national internet as opposed to a global internet. What are the implications of this for the United States policy on the internet, which is to have global connectivity and also for U.S. governance of the internet, which exists now and which might be compromised if a lot of other countries go national and follow Brazil, assuming Brazil does it in the first place?
Well, to take up with your last question, it's not clear yet that Brazil can or will just take itself off of the World Wide Web. Brazil is debating and may well pass in the next couple of weeks a law called the Marco Civil that has been developed by a group of people within the Justice Ministry and also outside at a big think tank in Brazil. The Marco Civil's foundation is net neutrality, and it's viewed internationally as a fairly progressive and important law. What Dilma laid on top of that was this requirement to retain data within Brazil. That piece of it is getting a lot of pushback, and not by just by the big guys and the providers, but precisely in terms of this connectivity. How do you do business in a global world if you're going to wall off? That question is on the table, and it might wind up falling off the radar in order to get the guts of the bill passed. What we've seen, though, is that she has gotten a lot of support, and you see this in Europe, but you see it in Germany specifically, and you see it in a lot of the developing world, for the idea that you do need to level the playing field and you do need to have multi-stakeholder participation in deciding on the governance of the internet, not just dominated by certain countries, certainly not by the United States. That's really picked up.
So this illustrates how the Snowden leaks were particularly damaging to the interests of the United States. If it turns out there's a cascading flight from the World Wide Web on the part of a number of countries.
Yes, indeed. But again, I would just say the practicalities of fleeing from the World Wide Web at the end of the day might mitigate against such a doomsday scenario.
Now, let's talk just briefly about infrastructure because we're running out of time. But Brazil's infrastructure is lousy. I mean, they have decayed airports. They have early 20th century roads. And here they're going to be hosting the World Cup and the Olympics. And is there any hope that they're going to get their act together in time, or are visitors to the World Cup going to land in an awful airport in Sao Paulo?
Well, you know, I would suggest that if visitors want to go to the World Cup, they choose some of the other cities, some of them in the Northeast, in the South, and stay out of Sao Paulo and Rio. Some of the newer airports in the regions are just function a lot better. But to your question, seriously, I don't know if by next summer the Brazilian infrastructure will be up to snuff to move that many people around. My guess is that there will be some improvements and a long way to go.
Well, let's hope in time for Rio in 2016. Well, Julia Swag has been just marvelous, and I have a question for you. And the question is Brazil worth spying on?
Brazil is the sixth largest economy in the world, and on that basis alone, the United States needs to know what's happening in Brazil.
We need to know what's happening, so that's why we do what we do. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks very much for having me.
And labor of love. And thank you for coming by. Tune in next week for more conversations on the digital age. Please visit our website at www.digitalage.org. For the digital age, I'm Jim Zirin. Good night and all the best.